November 10th, 2012, session of TeamSpeak for HPSDR. My name's Dave, KV0S. This week, I've been busy making a few changes in the website to keep up with all the upgrades that both Doug and Herman have been making to their software and trying to keep the version numbers in sync and such. I haven't been able to do a lot of radio programming myself because I got a lot of programming and things going on at the university. Basically, it's been working on the website. That's about it for me, and we'll go down the list. Next on the list, we have Mike, AA8K, shown as recording and mic muted. And then we have Rick, VE3MM.
Playing around with CUSDR right now, enjoying that program. Did run it on the Mac version earlier this week that Jeremy put together. It ran on my iMac, so that was nice to see. Congrats to Jeremy for doing that work. But other than that, played in the sweepstakes contest last week and had a really good time.
Next on the list, we have Rob, VE3EW.
I've been listening a couple of weeks, but mostly picking up Mike's recordings. Been along several months on a new job, and it's still behind, so we're trying to pull up even and get going, so spent a month down in Georgia, and I'm going to wind up doing it again another week, so that keeps me away from everything.
Next on the list, we have Warren, NR0V.
I didn't personally have too much radio time this week. However, thanks to a couple other folks that did some things, it turned out to be a pretty good week from my perspective. Last week on TeamSpeak, we had a discussion about pre-distortion and getting synchronized, transmitted, and received samples by sending back the transmit samples from the hardware in a borrowed receive stream. And much to my delight, on Saturday morning, I got an email from Joe, K5SO, who volunteered to change the firmware to do that. Joe also had another idea, which, based on preliminary measurements, I think is going to work out extremely well. What he did was to take the transmit samples where they would go out to the DAC and shove them into an N plus first, if you will, receiver, so they get received. This, I think, makes things much better on the software side and for the correction algorithms, because now the delay paths are exactly the same from the transmit signal going to the amplifier input and the receive signal, which comes from the amplifier output. So we have equal delays, equal processing, exactly the same on both those paths. Also, I now don't have to worry about any resampling or decimation to match transmit and receive sample rates. On Monday, Joe did the coding. I subsequently took time to put some infrastructure in Janus Audio, where I'm going to do the software work. By infrastructure, I mean, you know, things like data structures, basic utilities, the appropriate source files, etc. And, you know, I basically built my playground so I can proceed with the correction algorithm work there. As I think I said, some initial measurements I've done look pretty promising for this overall approach. Secondly, Doug, W5WC, took the AM and SAM demodulation work that I'd handed off to him in a single RX Power SDR, and he did the UI work and testing for that in the dual RX version. So he's put both versions on the SVN now. If you haven't seen it, Doug developed another very nice, what I think is a very, very nice feature in the dual RX version. It's a sort of a 1RX and 2RX all in one. You might want to pull that down and click the RX2 button on and off, and you'll see what I mean. Let's see. The final thing, finally, this morning on the OpenHPSDR website, I put a link to a brief document that just describes the basic use of some of the unique or improved features in the HPSDR version of PowerSDR. That can be found in the wiki under PowerSDR. Dave, that was the first time I've ever done anything with a website, so hopefully I didn't break anything. And that's it.
Next on the list, we have Bill, KD5TFD.
Let's see, nothing to report again this week, sort of getting a bit swamped by work. Warren, the pre-distortion stuff sounds real interesting, and shoving the output of the DAC back through the receive chain sounds like a fairly decent idea to simplify things out. So that's sort of a, that's one of those light bulbs turning on, I guess. So it good deal. Looks like there's going to be some good stuff to play with.
Next on the list, we have Jeremy in H6Z.
Good evening, everyone. Not a whole lot to report. I've been busying myself over the past couple days with antenna work outside that I probably should have done this summer while it was all nice out, but for some reason didn't. I just finished replacing out my 16-foot, 20-meter vertical with a, it's about a 44-foot vertical with the antenna tuner at the bottom instead. So hopefully going to get this up and running for the sideband sweepstakes next weekend. So I've been trying to do some prep work with that, and I think it's going to go out okay. But other than that, working on just helping out Herman with CUSDR and trying to get the sockets right for him on that. He did a redesign based on my horrible hack to as a proof of concept and released that as an alpha version. So I've been having some conversations with him so hopefully we can improve that program a little bit. Also, talking to a gentleman about a GNU radio module for OpenHPSDR that should be showing up on the SVN sometime soon. He's asked for some SVN space, and I just have to get around to configuring him up and letting him post it up there. But people should have a GNU radio piece out there as well. And then... other than that, I haven't been doing much with OpenHPSDR. I'm trying to get a I'm not very happy with any of the contest logging programs on the Mac, so I'm writing a quick and dirty sweepstakes logger for myself over the next week and going to see if that's going to work with some cool stuff with Core Data. So that's about what I've been up to over the past couple weeks.
Next on the list, we have Al in 0TVJ.
Last couple of weeks, I've been having fun. Actually, yesterday, I guess it was, or this morning, I got my N10 in. I've got two of the Hermes, and I'm putting one in an N10, and I've got the other one I'm going to use as a part of my moon bounce. It's going to be part of a transceiver, so it's going to just be a 28-meg IF, basically. I'm studying the... I have to solder this very tiny couple of connectors on and add the power switch to my Hermes, and I got that planned this weekend, so everybody wish me good luck. That's pretty small stuff.
Next on the list, we have Bob, the E3GKM, shown as recording and away. And then we have Dave, WA8YWQ.
This week, all my HPSDR time has been, once again, devoted to the group buy of mini-circuits parts for those who have bareboard Hermes. After some month of preliminary work, actually submitted the order to Mini-Circuits, and they are supposed to ship the parts today. And it turns out, while I ordered a few extra just to get up to the next standard level and provide for all the parts that I had requests for, all the parts that I ordered are now spoken for. So I'm happy about that. Now I'll be gathering shipping materials and getting ready to ship the parts out to all those who have paid their money and now they're waiting for their parts.
Next on the list, we have Dwayne, W5PNM, shown as mic muted. And then we have Greg, ZL3IX.
Well, my big news is that about 4 hours before this session, I received my Hermes module quite a bit later than most of you guys, but it's got a bit further to go, and unfortunately, NZ Customs took a little while to inform me that it arrived and get all the tax sorted out and that kind of thing. Anyway, I did finally receive it this morning. I'm applied power. I've managed to put in a static IP, and I'm now talking to it with PowerSDR. Haven't quite got a receiver antenna hooked up yet, but I plugged in the phones and I can hear noise out of it. So I went through all the bootloader stage of getting the IP address in okay. That seemed to work quite well. And that's what I'm doing at the moment.
Next on the list, we have Henry, PA0HJA, and he is recording in away. Then we have Ken, N9VV, shown as mic muted. And I was wondering if Ken would be willing to tell us about the status of the Apache Labs boards. I know some people were late are still wondering if there are things available from them. If he wants to come in, that's fine. Next on the list, we have Mike, K7SR, shown as Mike muted, and we have Ray, WA6NVL.
Ray here in San Diego. Nothing here, just listening to all you guys and appreciate all your efforts. I'm a Hermes user, and well, I should say I have one of the boards, and so this is the place to learn, and I appreciate it. Thank you, guys.
Okay, well, I think that brings us to the end of the list, so we're open for general discussion. And Ken says, sorry, I'm technical support only. All the Apache business is taken care of by the support people. So I was just wondering about availability. Let's open it up for general discussion.
Hey, Dave and the group, I got my board from Apache Labs and looked at it. It's a very nice, I'm very happy with the quality of it. Looks very nice. It came very nicely shipped in a night. It had a molded styrofoam thing around the whole assembly, and that was in a box. I only had one issue, and I can resolve that easy enough. The little power cable has a RF transformer. I guess it has a cord, had a torn core around the cable, and I guess the FedEx people must have did a shock test because that little core had turned into about little million little pieces. But I've got plenty of core, so it's not an issue. But it's everything that they said is there, and there's a description of what to do on their website. So I'm very pleased. I'll give you all an update next week about how successful I was.
Well, fine business, Al. I'm sure Ken was happy to hear that, and glad that you got yours safe and sound, other than a broken toroid.
Does anybody remember anything about what Tapper was going to do about end plates and the casing as a kit for the...
Rob, I think what they were planning to do was mark up the end plates, but I think they might be still waiting on the completion of Apollo.
Oh, that's a good...
Unfortunately, we don't have any of the folks that are working on it, either Dan or Scotty, here tonight, so we just have to guess.
Oh, that's okay. I'm wanting Apollo 2, so makes sense to me.
Jeremy, do you know anything about that?
Not in particular. I would think that we are indeed waiting to see if we're going to produce Apollo and then go for there. We don't. I haven't seen a proposal yet on whether we're going to produce Apollo or not, and I know there are some question marks up in the air with making that happen. So, I mean, some folks on the board are questioning whether with an on 10 out there that it's of any worth whatsoever to have Tapper just competing, producing a competing amplifier.
Well, that explains what the discussion is. So, anyway, if you have any feedback to Tapper, let them know your feelings about opinions either way.
Dave, WA8YWQ, that Dave. Did I make the cut, or did you get my email too late?
I just got an email from you today, but that was the first time I heard you were interested.
Yeah, I had sent something to the Exploder, and I was on this iPad, and apparently if you don't send the message from the account you registered, it doesn't go out on the Exploder. It's the way, I guess that's the way it works. Anyway, so I noticed that I saw you were closing things up. If you had any extra, if they're not all spoke for, I was going to get one. I've got a bare board. I'm going to build one myself, but I particularly wanted the parts for the BNA because I'm for sure going to build one of those, the bridge.
Yeah, sorry you got left out. I was starting to put together a list back in October. So anyway, all I can say is I'm sorry. On the VNA, I've talked with Sam Wetterlin, and he has a couple suggestions for the bridge that would increase the directivity. I looked at the circuit board, and it doesn't seem to be set up to work with any standard SMA connector. So I'm looking into, I'm going to make some changes to the circuit board. And I'll put out a message on the reflector probably this next week. Somebody suggested some SMA connectors made in China that look pretty nice. And I'll be interested to see how others feel about that connector. I'll include the link to that eBay site. And I had that seller send me a mechanical drawing so that I can adapt the circuit board to work with those connectors.
Okay, well, thanks. I should have been more on the ball. I saw all that discussion going on, and I said I was waiting for it to settle down, and I obviously waited too late. But I'll order some if I have to. I'll order to 10, the minimum order, and I'll just have some spares, and maybe later on somebody else will want them. Once I get them, I'll worry about it. But, yeah, I'll watch for your information on the bridge. I can't remember the number, but I looked at that bridge that Phil posted the while back that had those 10. It had 10 dual-core things and then two little PC boards. Is that the one you're looking at or a different one?
It's one that Sam Wetterlund called the 3-bead Ballon bridge. It has two circuit boards. One of them has a mini circuits Ballon transformer on it, a few resistors. And the other board basically has a conductor. Oh, I think it has a little attenuator on it as well. But in between is a piece of very thin coax that's wound through three ferrite beads. And that's sort of the cleanup Ballon to help out the mini circuits part.
Okay, well, I'll look it up. I'll get off here. I've been hogging it too long. Let the other guys talk. And even though I didn't get to do it, I appreciate it. I've done some of that ordering before for people, and that's a real job. So you deserve a good pat on the back for taking that on.
Well, thank you. And if you order some parts, my guess is if you have extras, let it be known, because the extras that I had went very fast.
Dave, thanks again for the buy. On the 3-bead Ballon bridge, I think maybe you alluded to it. It looked like in the picture there were two circuit boards and they were sort of connected by a piece of brass. If you're redoing the circuit board or have you considered making that one circuit board rather than having the brass in between two, or is there a reason not to do that?
Well, I think that the only reason not to, I guess, well, I guess there are two reasons to not. One is to do minimum changes, which is appealing to me. And the second one is it increases the circuit board area, so the cost goes up. Maybe I shouldn't consider that as a criterion.
Okay, well, I don't know. I'm not sure exactly how much the cost difference would be. I understand the part about minimal changes because with any change comes a risk. So so I do understand that. It just seemed like it would be a lot neater to have a single circuit board and maybe easy to always ensure that the dimensions were exactly right if you were putting it in a box and that sort of thing. But whatever you do, whatever you decide to do, will be greatly appreciated.
Well, there's going to be some investigation. I think, actually, I'm going to need to go ahead and buy some parts and build a circuit board as a prototype just to play around with it before I start making 50-some copies, because there are, I believe, more than 50 people who have expressed interest in that bridge. Would hesitate to make 50 copies of something that I hadn't tried.
Yes, coming from an industry where we used to manufacture things like that, I completely understand.
So I hope this next week to at least put out a message on the reflector with a little bit of what I found and ask for some opinions. My guess is there's some who would just say, I want to build it now. I'm not sure how I'll respond to that.
Amen.
Well, if no one has anything more for me, I think I'll bow out for today.
73, Dave.
73.
73.
73 to everyone. Have a great week.
User disconnected from your channel.
Well, I'm going to pass along my 73s to everybody and see if I can get some boards upgraded in my other HPSDR stuff now. We've got a bit of time tonight, so we'll see you all here next week, Hope.
73, Rob.
I'm going to get out of here, too. Good night, guys. 73.
User disconnected from your channel.
73, Al.
73, Al. Say, Bill, your markings are, of course, all over Janus Audio. I have a question for you. Don't know if it's been quite a while since you looked at it.
I can try and answer.
Okay. Well, there's I don't have it in front of me. There's a file there, something like Power SDR Interface. In there, there's a somewhat lengthy function that is clearly used to set everything up, including allocating memory for buffers, etc. So in that file, I put a call to a function that sets up my, you know, allocates memory for my data structures and so on. My question is, I don't see, or I haven't yet found at least, a similar place that sort of closes things up, like freeing memory that was allocated, et cetera, which, of course, is fine. The OS should do that if there's only one call to that PowerSDR interface function that allocates stuff in the first place. Well, the OS will do it anyway, but what I'm wondering is that function only called once when PowerSDR is opened? And if it can be called multiple times, is there a place that I should put a call to a function to free memory?
Let me go look. There's some, I'll have to go look at the code. Off the top of my head, there's probably a bunch of stuff that gets allocated once at the first time it's called and is never freed. Or just wait for the OS to wipe me out when you kill the program. There's another case, though, where he opens and closes things is when you hit the power on button in Power SDR, and there's a corresponding call to when you turn things off. And there, he does clear out FIFOs and things like that, although I think actually the buffers I allocate for the FIFO, I think, is a fairly static allocation. I'm not sure if I trash those, you know, if I... freed those and remallocate them on every cycle. Let me go look at the code and let me go see.
Okay, appreciate that. You'll find it quicker than I will.
I can't remember where the hell I've got the source code around here. Yeah. Hey Warren, where in there did you put your initialization stuff? Because there's essentially two start and stop routines in here, start audio and stop audio. And whatever you allocate in start audio, you would tend to deallocate in stop audio.
Okay, I just guess I didn't read far enough, or I missed the deallocation in stop audio. So that is what I will do. I will I'll pull it up here and I'll find it right now, and that's what I'll do.
Yeah, and if you find something that I didn't do that with, it certainly could be that possibility is there. I'll be red-faced and embarrassed if it is, though.
No, you probably have it all perfect, but I will. I'll take a look. I'll find stop audio and deallocate there. Thanks, Bill. Appreciate it.
But just for your own information, this is the routine where this is where all of the entry points in here actually show up on the C-sharp side of things. So this is actually the interface layer from PowerSDR down into the Janus Audio, which is now clearly, well misnamed.
Yeah, I see all the API set up there for that. So I understand what you're talking about. On my stuff, I put it in a separate file just because I want to kind of keep it as portable as I can for the moment. But I obviously have a similar thing.
It actually looks like stop audio is pretty far down. And for some reason, I got start audio at the top of that and stop audio way the hell down at the bottom.
Yeah, by now there's a lot of stuff that's... if def out and so on in between, so it makes the file a little bit long.
And it's nested.
cannons. I'm actually real bad about doing depping stuff in and out, and probably should clean this up one of these days.
Yeah, one of these days I'm going to do that with SDR.C and DTTSP as well. And I'm as guilty as anybody of commenting stuff out and so on in there, but it's about double the length or more than it needs to be right now.
Yeah, I was going to say, the stop auto you're looking for is about line 350 or so. There's actually sort of two versions of the code here. There's actually an old two-channel version going back to the Xylo days, which is all actually conditionally compiled out, and that's actually what's down at the bottom.
Yeah, and the version I pulled from the SVN fairly recently, looks like the one that is active, as far as I can tell, is at about line 435.
Okay. That could very well be. I didn't realize there was much change going on down here. I guess Joe had to do, or not Joe, Doug had to do some changes in here, I know, for the multi-receiver stuff.
Yes, he did.
This is some deep, dark code down here. This is sort of some ugly stuff.
Yeah, I deciphered the parts of it that were close to where I needed to do things, so I understand.
Yeah, well, that's okay. Well, glad you found what you needed there. And if you ever have questions or anything, just shoot me a note or catch me here.
Appreciate it, Bill. Always appreciate your help on this stuff. You've been through most of it.